Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week this show will address issues such as family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and many things that will improve our lives. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, for all of you listening, I want you to know I'm looking for some show ambassadors. I'm looking for some people that will forward at least one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. And I guarantee you, you will all know somebody that can benefit from this subject. I want everybody to know that I truly appreciate it. And this is just another way that we can make a positive difference in the lives of others. Now, got some questions for you. So first, are you overbooking and undersleeping? Has busy almost become a status symbol for you? Has having all become synonymous with doing it all? Our guest today wants to give you back your life by helping you break the busyness habit by offering realistic, step-by-step, and even fun ways to get off the busyness hamster wheel and reclaim your life and your time. With us to talk about this and more is Yvonne Talley, the co-founder of Poised, a fitness and lifestyle company located in the heart of Silicon Valley. Yvonne has been a health and wellness consultant and entrepreneur for over 20 years. She is a master neurolinguistic programming practitioner, author, and speaker. As a meditation teacher as well, Yvonne includes guided meditation as a vital practice for revealing meaningful outcomes and focusing desired goals for professional success, physical and emotional healing, and healthy mood management. She is a classically trained chef, certified Pilates instructor, and fitness trainer. Her new book, Breaking Up with Busy, Yvonne provides readers with practical and mindful solutions for slowing down and enjoying life with a sensible balance of energetic wellness, spiritual connection, and methods for sustaining personal fulfillment. Yvonne, welcome to Answers for the Family.
It's my pleasure to be with you, Alan.
Well, Yvonne, first I got to tell you, I mean, you're here with a message that is, it's perfect timing for me, and I'll bet for many of our listeners. One of the thoughts that I had as I was doing the introduction, the classically trained chef, that was a part that I didn't know, and I thought, that must conflict a little bit with the part of us that wants to that wants to stay fit. How do you make such great food and still handle that part of it?
Oh, thank you. That is a great question. Easy. I stick close to Mother Nature. I always say if it looks like it did when it came out of the ground or fell off the tree, that's my wheelhouse. And when we make things that are delicious from Earth, gosh, what could we be missing, right? Nothing, really. So I still make a lot of really delicious types of foods that are really good for me and my family. And at the same time, I don't skimp on any of the flavor. And I think that's really important. So that's one of the things I really work with my clients is don't be afraid of that. Don't be afraid of herbs. Don't be afraid of getting your kids in that kitchen and having them touch and smell and taste, because that's a really important key element in living a really well life. And that is to tantalize your palate and to reward it.
I love that, and I've been working quite a bit on not only myself but getting my loved ones off of any sort of processed food and such. So any input on that is helpful for us, and I think it is for everybody out there. Now,
the processed food, just real quickly with the processed food, that's a very important thing that you're doing for your family and for yourself, because that messes up our thinking, our mood. everything. So if we can stick close to Mother Nature and not, you know, as I said, and not give up the great flavors and the enjoyment of food, and as we know, it's all about balance and moderation, that's a really important thing that you're doing for your family, is just that awareness of that. So thank you for that.
Thank you. I mean, and that's one of the things that I love about the fact that you have included all of these things. You know, you've included, you know, the NLP, you've included the things that we can do with our mind, and then tied in, you know, how this works with our brain, how our, obviously, if we're eating something, how our gut, you know, how that area works with the brain as well. So, hey, I think that's why I said I think the timing is right, because I think that's what we're learning now, is it's all connected.
Yeah, it's all connected. And I think one of the important things for us to, just as we go through our life, through this busy culture and raising families and helping others and being of service, is it can feel very overwhelming. Oh my goodness, now I have to meditate. Now I have to exercise. Now I can't have this and I can't have that. So the important thing is to turn that around to, what do you want? What do you want to feel like in your life? And how can you be of service to yourself first, and by extension to all those that you love? And you just take that one shift at a time. If it's food, then you focus on that for the week and make one small shift. And just know that all of that is going to also affect your mood, your ability to focus, your awareness, and just your sense of well-being. And your mind plays, this is where it all happens, right between the ears. The mind is the most important, powerful tool. Give it one shift at a time. Try not to get too overwhelmed with trying to make things perfect. Just think about progress.
Well, and in regards to progress, I think that may be where some of us have taken it too far. And you know, for some of the listeners know that I've traveled all over the world, but one of the things that I've realized is here in the U.S., you know, it's all about being busy, which is one of the things that drew me to your book. So, you know, you start, you know, the idea of breaking up with busy by saying, I'm busy is the new I'm fine. How so is that? I mean, let's talk a little bit about that, because, you know, I come from the I'm fine generation also, to where that's what you said, but you're right. Now I find that seems to be the answer, and it's not just here. It's spreading all over.
Yeah, I come from the I'm fine generation as well, and I think many, many of us do. So what's interesting about what's happened in our culture, if I could dig just a little bit under this for a moment, and that is, you know, at one time in our culture, it was all about, I say many of us fit, were, you know, get into the habit and the idea and the culture of faking happiness. And that response of I'm fine was just a way to be polite, to greet, and to also exit a conversation. And it was acceptable without having to dig under. Because at that time, when we go back, you know, 30 years, at that time, our culture was much more private. We didn't slap on the front of every page in social media every moment of every thought of everything that we're doing. Now we do. So we've really shifted this. This I'm fine was a way to protect our privacy, and it was also I'm doing really well, so no one else would ask any questions. And so as we move into where we are today, this I'm busy gives that sense, is really replace that, because saying I'm fine doesn't say anything to anybody anymore. It's almost a turnoff and a pushback of not engaging with somebody. But when you say I'm busy, everybody gets it, because everybody is talking about how busy they are. Now, how did that get set up? Well, leisure has become the new lazy. You know, 30, 40 years ago, if you had leisure time, that meant you had made it. You'd made enough money, you were successful enough where you could take time off, and that was seen as something that was successful. Well, we flipped that on its head, and now when you're not doing anything, it just means that you're not that important. So there's this underlying message that busy means you've made it, you're successful, people want you, you're important. And so I want to be like you too. And if we're going to be in the same crowd and we're going to share the same social life, we want to connect. That's what human beings do. So the idea of you being busy and me being busy, we get each other and we're able to connect. And so that false sense of importance gets translated throughout all of the relationships. And then it just becomes something that we do all the time and say all the time.
Well, now, why is it that it seems like, you know, I guess we as America lead the way in a lot of things. It's unfortunate that we seem to lead the way in not having enough free time, not having enough vacation time, or, quote, being busy all the time. I mean, you know, that, you know, I think we also probably lead the world now in depression and anxiety and all of these other things. What can we do to start turning this around?
I think one of the really important things is that I'm getting a lot of feedback on the line. Let me see if I can get a better, there we go. I think one of the things that's really important when we look at our culture, we're a very fortunate culture. We have a lot of wealth in our country. We also have a lot of people that aren't experienced wealth as well. But we set this up with this busy culture now, and we are very focused in our culture, in our country, about who's doing better. And so there's comparisons that are constantly going on, and this gets fed in now even so much more so through technology. And when we start playing that comparison game, there's really no way to, quote, win. But as Americans, very many of us are really focused on getting that done. We want to be able to be the winner. We want to be able to be the best. It's in our culture. It's constantly being fed to us that that is what it's about. This busyness is, I think, has come a lot because we are so fortunate. You know, we spend an average of 5 hours a day on our telephones. So when somebody says, I'm too busy, I don't have enough time to meditate, I don't have enough time to do X, Y, and Z, just alone, if we just put our phone down and put it away for X amount of time, 5 hours a day, that's a huge chunk of our day. And if you're a millennial, you're touching it 150 times a day. You're moving it around, but you're actually touching it 3,000 times a day. So this is a lot of time we're spending on distractions. So these distractions feed into this busy, and then it becomes our juice. We get used to that pace. And for us not to be busy seems foreign to us now, especially if you've gotten on that hamster wheel. And we know very, very well now that technology has a very strong addictive quality to it. So it's about setting boundaries. Technology is absolutely fantastic. If we would not have the mobilizing of social shift and change if it weren't for technology. We certainly wouldn't have the medical advances as quickly as we have without technology. However, for all of us, technology has just stormed into our lives and into our relationships, I might add, and we haven't set the boundaries around it. It's a surprise that it's so addictive, but it is, and now we have to find some adjustments for it.
Yeah, and you brought up a good point about, you know, we're spending 5 hours on that. You know, it's interesting. And one of the things that we do is we transport at-risk youth and we take them to specialized programs. And I can't tell you how many times in which I'm talking to a parent about what is going to be done with their child. And I'm saying, okay, you know, let's set up a time in which we can get both of you on the phone because we want to speak to both parents. And we get this, well, I don't know if we can both be on because we're so busy. Mm-hmm. Wait a minute. I mean, we're talking about, you know, where your child is going to go for the next 2 years or something like that. How is it that you're both too busy? And, you know, and like you said, if we're spending 5 hours on our phone, that's not all, you know, work related, but or sitting in front of a television or whatever it is that's being done. But you're right. I mean, it's this concept of busy being the buzzword for anything, I guess. You know, and especially if it's something that you don't necessarily want to do. Okay, well, I'm just too busy. I'm just too busy. I can't do this. I'm just too busy.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, how can we start reversing it? And I know that some of the things you talk about in the book and as it relates to meditation and things, let's talk about some of the things that we can do that will actually start reversing this in our own lives and then how we can spread that out to others.
Well, you make this point about parents and not being able to have enough time to handle something or to come together at something that's so critical as far as when your children, especially when they're in a place in their lives where they really need us. Right. So that just goes to show you the addictive quality to all of these distractions, because I want to always give everyone the benefit of the doubt, and I do believe everyone does the best that they can, and I don't think any parent would deliberately be unavailable to their children. Mm-hmm. As a general wide sweep, but just imagine how addictive this whole business of busy is for us to now make these choices and decisions that we have lost our priorities. that mm-hmm. they've become so muddled and confused that we don't have enough clear mental space to really make those distinctions. So it, just from the brain standpoint, the prefrontal cortex, which is where we process complex processing, such as reasoning, logic, problem solving, planning. So when we're distracted and busy, that gets really shut down. It gets muted. And so that's why we aren't really clear about our thinking. And often a parent will say, I don't have time for that. When really, if they slowed down and they created some space to really be present with that process, they would make a different decision. So I think what we can do to begin to slow this down or even reverse it at some point, I'm not sure it'll be reversed, but I do think we need to have better boundaries around it, is what I say to everybody, and that's that first piece that you just said, is to physically slow down. And there's three things I always tell somebody when they come into my office, when mm-hmm. I begin working with them. I say, this might sound a bit strange. Here's your homework. I want you to do three things. I want you to slow down the way you talk to people. I want you to slow down the way you walk. And I want you to slow down the way you drive. And I just want you to practice that, because what's going to happen is you're going to become conscious of this shift. And that will start that ball rolling, because we have to break that pace. We have to find a way to get out of that busy, distracted, constant, ongoing, all, be the best, get it pace. And the only way that we could do that is through some real functional things that aren't going to take it time for me to go out and buy something or process something or learn something. I'm just going to slow down those three things and see how I feel, because it's reconnecting with feelings that becomes important so that you can stop the overdoing.
Yeah. Wow. You got that right. So as I was going through the book, and again, for anybody out there, I mean, if you get the opportunity, please, you know, check this out. It's called Breaking Up with Busy. And I learned a lot of things, and I'm reading it as a male, because again, it's Breaking Up with Busy, but it is focused more towards the busy woman. And in fact, you coin a phrase in there, and you refer to it as OSW in your book. So share a little bit about, you know, what an OSW and how can women tell if they are one?
Yeah, the OSW is the overscheduled woman, and the book is really geared towards her for it, because there's some real concrete reasons as to why women are even more busy than men. It doesn't mean that we are separate from this. It just means that there's a difference and that we both can learn from one another and help one another find a more balanced pace. So the overscheduled woman is faced with this on a day in, day out basis, especially when she's building her family and career simultaneously. So, and even clients, female clients that do not have children, aren't raising children, are still experiencing the same demands, especially for their career. So it's that get it done attitude. And she frequently opts out of doing something for herself when someone else close to her request her time. And in the book, there's 10 signs of being busy. So that would be one of them. And she often puts herself last on her list, and she becomes optional rather than making really important self-care time for herself. It's only, well, if I have time, rather than something that she's going to show up for herself. So if the overscheduled woman had a tribal chant, it would sound something like, make it happen, get it done, be the best, give it your all, and then do it again. So what sets it up is this imbalance between obligation and expectation and that lack of personal replenishment. And that leaves many women feeling as though they just can't catch up with their own lives. So that, in a nutshell, would be the overscheduled woman. Now, how does that get set up? Well, we know that average women make about 80 cents on the dollar compared to men. And if you're a woman of color, that drops down to about 63 cents. And women working outside of the home, two-thirds of them have school-age children. Divorce is at, of course, the peak it's ever been before. So many of these women are caring for their families on their own. They've got to work longer hours. And we're still picking up 80% of what's called non-paid work. Those are all the things, in fact, we spend about 14 hours a day in this category, all the things that we need to do to make life go. And women are still managing that. So this is how that gets set up. You know, it's the economics, it's the expectation, it's the lack of self-care that really make it much more so for women than men. Doesn't mean they're not busy. It just means women are more busy and affected by that.
Well, yeah, and again, I couldn't agree more. And we work with a lot of single mothers, and that's one of the things that we see is the fact that, you know, there's a stress over what's going on with their children, but yet they're still holding down a job. They're still taking them to whatever it may be, if it's band or if it's sports or, you know, whatever it is that they're involved in. So, you know, spinning all of these pie plates and, you know, this coming from someone that, you know, based on you coining the phrase that, you know, I've definitely been in OSM multiple times in my life. So, believe me, I get it and I feel for everybody going through it. So I love the fact that, you know, that we can now go to things like meditation and stuff to be able to help slow down their pace, as you said. But let's talk a little bit about the NLP, the neurolinguistic programming, and some of the techniques that are playing a big part in some of the solutions that you offer for breaking up with busy.
Yeah, I really, at the core of the language that I use, and because language is so powerful and strong, the language that I use and just the way that I've put together the techniques and the solutions bring a lot of that NLP into it. For anybody that doesn't know, the neurolinguistic programming, which is, you know, various techniques for improving communication and personal growth. So that's really what the neurolinguistic, and we look at a lot about how we process our experiences via our senses and the language that we use to communicate those experiences to ourselves first and then others. And then we apply a meaning to that using our senses again, and we develop our own unique language. That's the programming part of it, and that's the way that we communicate to other people. And what happens is we set up these strategies to move these programmings and these habits forward. And often we do that often we do that in a way that's not resourceful for us. So how can we begin to shift that, and how can we get out of our busy pace? Well, we've got to have solutions. So one of those solutions would be not only the descheduling, but the first one I really share with clients is healthy boundaries. Like, think of boundaries like a handrail on a staircase. Everybody feels better when they're there. And boundaries aren't meant to keep people out. Rather, they're meant to protect personal space so that each of us can develop and protect and maintain our sense of self. So the first thing I work with a client is to get, let's talk about those boundaries and how we can not only maintain them, but develop them. Because for many times now in families, these boundaries are so overshadowed. And in work now, too, with the technology that you can be on vacation and still get 10 texts from your boss or your coworkers, and that's not what a vacation is designed for. So boundaries have to be set. So as an example, where we would bring NLP in would be one of the techniques I use called flag your feelings, by being aware of your feelings before you get to that point where you feel resentful or uncomfortable. So simple technique to use your visual capabilities. A yellow flag would mean pause and evaluate. Yellow means you're very close to your limits, so take some time before responding. And that's a good visual. Many people that are visually stimulated and learn through visuals, this is a great way to begin to be aware of your boundaries in areas that you might feel as though you're losing your ability to set those boundaries well. So, and then a red flag would be, you know, stop, communicate where you're at, and be firm but be kind. And then move out of that situation so that you can come back into it. So it's just about clear communication and mindful communication. Be direct and empathetic, not defensive or accusatory, and keep it simple.
Yeah. You know, if you could share, many of our listeners are parents. We get feedback quite a bit. We get a lot of teachers, parents, psychologists, therapists and stuff that send in questions or comments. Share a little bit about the matching and pacing, because I think for many of the parents, one of their biggest issues is dealing with their children, you know, and that becomes a stressor to them while they're still going to work and doing all of these things. And granted, it can be used in work and everything else. Share a little bit about matching and pacing and how that can maybe help them take them to a more calm place.
Yes, that's a biggie. I find that to be one of the most helpful tools is the matching and the pacing. So the first thing I would do is back that up just a bit. And I would share with the client, when you detach your emotional connection to the outcome, you will be in a place to listen. When we get very connected with what the outcome is on an emotional level, we cannot hear what the other person has to say, or we certainly can't hear it as effectively as we probably could if we just pull our emotions out of it. And when we're dealing with our children, that can become very difficult because we have that emotional investment. We love them. We care about them. We're worried for them. We're fearful. And when that worry and fear and anxiety get in the way, again, not only will your prefrontal cortex say, bye-bye, I'm on a break, and you won't be able to think as clearly, it's not going to help the situation. So deep breath. This is the technique I use. Deep breath, because when we take a deep breath in, we stimulate our vagus nerve, and that allows us to calm down, lowers our blood pressure, lowers our heart rate, even lowers the cortisol, which is produced by the stress. So now you're going to be able to start thinking clearly. Take a deep breath or take 5 deep breaths. We always have time to do that. Ask yourself, am I emotionally connected to the outcome? Could I disconnect from that outcome emotionally now so that I can be of service? Those are the questions. And then you move into pacing. And pacing is a way that when I'm talking really fast and my voice is really loud, then you want to pace that same thing back to your child. And it's going to seem very manufactured and very awkward in the beginning. Be authentic with it. And the only way that you can be authentic with it is, what's your intention for this? What is your intention for this? Why are you having this conversation? What is your desired outcome from this? What intention do you bring to it? My intention is I want to be of service and to help my child. I'm going to disconnect from my emotional, over-emotional connections to that outcome. And now I'm going to listen and I'm going to pace with them. And then I'm going to start to begin to shift the pace. So if they're revved up and they're really excited and they're speaking quickly, you can go right into that conversation and have that same tone with them, and then slowly you're going to be able to slow that down, and they will then begin to match your pace. Not always. And this is a practice. This is a technique that requires practice. So just try it one sentence at a time, and just, or one conversation, and move to one conversation. But it can be a very valuable tool, because people will hear that they're listened to when you do that. And the other thing, Alan, I would add to that, is when your child is speaking to you, be really mindful of the way that you are in the conversation. Are you slumped? Is your phone present? Are you looking around? Are you making gestures with your head, turning your head no, and they say, what do you mean no? And you say, I didn't say no. Yes, you did. I just saw you shake your head, right? So be mindful of what your body is also communicating, because we know, you know, 80, 90% of what we're communicating is coming from our nonverbal cues and the way that we're expressing. And try not to be in that position where you're going, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Were you making those little sounds? Because when you do that, it makes the other person feel as though either they have to rush through the conversation or you're really not listening because you're preparing for your rebuttal. So that's how I would begin with that.
Yeah, and I think it's a great point. The as far as, like you said, the matching and pacing part, you're not only bringing down them, but it's making you bring yourself down. It's when you mentioned about knowing yourself, that's also helping from the standpoint that you're not allowing you to be sucked into their hyper positioning at that point, or their fast speech, or their tone, or their volume. You know, so I think it's great that, you know, as the parent, you need to take that position, and that will help you, help anybody, I think, in any conversation to be able to stay in the part of your mind that allows you to remain calm and have a reasonable conversation. That's great.
Yeah. And when you're, you know, because of the work, that fine, beautiful, so needed work that you do when you have youth at risk, I understand the situations are volatile and they are extreme. At the end of the day, we are all human beings and we want two things. We want to be appreciated and we want to be happy. Yep. So we want to connect also with one another. But those two things right there, we want to be appreciated. How can we show appreciation? Our children are not our property. We are the stewards. We have that beautiful opportunity to be the stewards and help and guide them. We cannot fix things for them. We can only be a guide for them. At times in our lives when they're tiny and they're small, of course, that's quite different. At some point, though, we have to take that position of being of strength and kindness all in one setting.
Yep. And if you continue to fix every little thing while they're small, when something does happen, when they get older, they're not going to know how to handle it. So I couldn't agree with you more. We're going to take a break. For everybody out there, please continue to listen. If you would like to follow along or you want to start looking at some of the information on Yvonne, you can go to YvonneTally.com. That's YvonneTally.com. You can open up another window. Obviously, if you're driving, don't try this. But we're going to take a break. We will be right back. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. We're speaking with Yvonne Talley, and we are talking about her new book, Breaking Up with Busy. And Yvonne, we have a question that's coming in. This one's coming in from a listener. This one reads, my daughter is so stressed out. She is working in a company that downsized its staff about 5 years ago while taking on more work. She was doing the job of three people. Over the last year, they have added staff and increased wages, but she is still overworked and afraid to complain for fear that that they will replace her. She is a single parent with school loans and other financial obligations to take care of. Will your book help her find ways to cope with this situation? And that's from Betsy in Oregon.
Oh, Betsy, thank you for that question and that statement of where your daughter is at. And she is not alone. Business today has really changed the dynamics in the field of how we do business. And that goes back to that no boundaries. Afraid to complain. This is a big one, especially, unfortunately, for women. When we lead with need, we will not be able to move ourselves forward. We will be stuck. So I always say, when you make a choice and a decision, never let need be a part of that is going to move you forward. Don't let the fear get in the way, because this afraid to complain, that fear is what's blocking her. So have her figure out what that fear is, and you can do that as easy as, what am I afraid of? Once she can determine that, then let's get the quote, power on her side. And I'll tell her the same thing that I tell all of my young millennial women. This is what you want to do. You set it up where you go and you interview with other companies. It's going to do a couple of things. One, it's going to get your chops lit up as far as being able to get out and talk to other people and talk about yourself. It's going to put you in contact with what you are feeling, And it's also going to allow you to build your self-confidence to know that other people are out there that are willing to hire you. Then you go in and you speak to them. Be very clear on what it is that you need and for what that want is. I'm going to have an exercise in the book called Your Need-Want Connection. Figure out what you need to get to that want. And then when you do that, you're going to be more likely to move forward. Don't let fear hold you back. Use it as a motivator, not as your intimidator.
You know, I'm glad that you brought that up because, and as you were saying that, I started to think about the fact that you talk about that in the book, you know, where you say that changing our relationship with busy requires us to know our own personal need-want connection and how it relates to our goals. So share a little bit more on how they can figure out what their own need-want connection is.
Yeah, very important, because we often get focused on this, I want that. And so we move in that direction, and that's normal for us to do that. But when we start thinking about the things that we want, there's usually something underneath that thing that we're trying to get to. And we often get stuck when making tough decisions because we confuse the want with the need. So the want represents the desire, and the need represents the essentials required to bring that desire or goal to fruition. It is what you need to get what you want. So you want to be able to ask yourself, what is it that I want, and what will change when I have it, and how will I know? What will be different? What is the evidence that I will have to know things have changed? And when you ask yourself those questions, you can start to now unbury or dig a little bit deeper as to what that really is about. Fear is the same thing. If we just stop and say, what am I afraid of? What's my fear? I won't be liked. I won't have a job. I won't be able to pay my bills. This, that, and what happens. And then what we end up doing, Alan, is we spend all of our energy into what we fear rather than what we want to create. So when we get that need-want connection clear, and then we do this second part, and that is focus on what you want, not what you fear. And that will lead you right straight into the path of making changes, shifts that will lead you more towards what you're going to feel in your life that brings you joy.
Yep. And yes, and as you were saying that, you know, it just the thought going through my mind, which I have said myself many times, you are what you focus on, you know. So you're absolutely right. You know, if we continue to focus on being fearful, and unfortunately, we're in a time in which if anybody pays attention to anything that's going on, you know, within the news and everything else, they know that fear is a great motivator. So they use it and they push on it. And that's their whole thing is we're going to focus on fear. We're just going to try to push that button as much and as long as we possibly can. And we need to get away from it. We need to, if it means turn it off or whatever, but let's get away from the fear. As you said, we are what we focus on. So let's focus on the things that we want and the goals that we want to have within ourselves, within our family, within our community. So, yes, thank you
very
for that.
Very important. Very now, important. It's very difficult to like you said, turn it off. Yep. Simple, turn it off.
Yep. Now, another thing in your book that I noticed that you go into where it says you offer four different traps that women often fall into. Can you give an example of one or two of those? Because I think that there'll be some synergy in there where people will, you know, will go, wait a minute, that's one that I fall into.
Yeah, there's four traps that I say that really get set up for the overscheduled woman. And again, this is true for all of us, but particularly for women. And it's that being all, keeping up, saying yes, which is a big one, and overgiving. So the being all, many women fall into this trap when they feel as though it's expected of them to get it all done. You know, this I can have everything, I can do everything, I can have it all. Well, that's true, but something's going to give. Something, you know, to be able to sustain that idea, something is going to fall. And so often at the expense of their own well-being. So it puts enormous pressure on themselves to be everything to everyone, this being all trap. And they feel inadequate when they fall short of not getting it all done. So the other side of this, or another one, is the saying yes trap, and primarily the need to please others. This often gets set up in early childhood with parents that are either domineering or micromanaging their children. Let's mm-hmm. take account of that. This is happening a lot in our culture today with every decision. And over time, that strips away the child's confidence to think independently and to know that they can get to the other side through a difficult time on their own. So love becomes conditional, and people-pleasing becomes a way to protect that person from feeling unloved. So you can see how, and you know, these traps, there might be a little bit in it in one and a little bit in another, but this is typically the way it's getting set up, and it has a lot to do with not feeling being enough, not being accepted and needing praise or being able to be connected or recognition. So all of these things come into play.
Well, again, as I was going through the book, I just felt there was so much synergy with the ways in which, you know, I believe that we should be communicating with people. And I noticed, for instance, okay, being comfortable with silence and active listening, that's two things that we do. We teach our employees when they're working with at-risk youth. Share with us what roles they play in breaking up with busy.
The silence part of it?
Yeah, the silence and the active listening.
Yeah, really important. People that are extroverted and people that are introverted, there's been studies that have done when you're in an office setting, if there's more introvert thinkers and people, that will also quiet down the extrovert, because there's this idea in our world that if we're noisy and loud and we're always the one that has the answer and our hand up, and I think that's important also. But there's also the other side of that, and that's the quiet side. And just because someone may be quiet doesn't mean that they don't understand or they're not listening. So silence is a powerful tool, and I believe is essential to being what I call an active listener. So active listening requires us to silence the mind chatter, the disconnects, and the distractions from emotionally charged feelings that can undermine our goals and our desired outcomes. And silence supports our capacity for mindful thinking. Certainly in meditation, it strengthens the area of the brain, again, that is active in decision-making, that prefrontal cortex. So I was having a conversation recently, and one of the people in the conversation said, in a day like today, in a time like tonight that we're in right now, you're advocating for us to be silent, not speaking up. And I said, oh, no, quite the opposite. When I talk about silence, it's about in relationship to not only being an active listener and being able to really hear what someone else is saying, it's also about quieting your mind enough to nourish it. And quiet time is essential for overall wellness. It's a mindful recess. By no means does this mean you don't speak up for yourself. You absolutely have to speak up for yourself, and you'll be able to do that better, with better choices, with more mindfulness, if you allow quiet time into your daily practice, and if you learn to listen by being silent.
You know, I know that you also talk about the correlation between, you know, our health and our busyness, or our health and the anxiety that we carry. We have a question that's coming in again from a listener, and this one reads, I am currently dealing with the healing process from a breast cancer operation. And I believe that the constant pressure of running my own catering business and dealing with demanding clients is at the core of my illness. I have taken up meditation and drastically changed my diet, but I still feel overwhelmed and depressed much of the time. With my health expenses having skyrocketed, I can't afford to just walk away. Upon hearing you would be on this show, I purchased your book and I am waiting for it to arrive. I know I'm not alone. What are your thoughts for people like me? And this is from Alice in Louisiana.
Oh, boy, I feel for Alice, number one, and sending you lots of healing energy for your recovery. A couple of things, and this is where I try to be compassionate and still at the same time very honest about some approaches that would be helpful for her. And that is, when we, again, that anxiety when it comes to our wellness and we've gone through something that can be extremely challenging. We have to begin to change the message to ourselves. And with skyrocketing costs from any type of illness, yes, we do have to continue to work. We have to have an income. However, we have to have a boundary around that where when we think about our job, that we think about it in a way that it is an opportunity for us to move forward. So if we have that sense, that undercurrent of, oh, I just need some time to heal and to rest, but I've got to go to work because I've got to pay the bill. That's where our attention is. So we need to change that message, that narrative to ourselves. I'm going to heal and rest in this time right now. And by the way, we've worked with in my business with recovering cancer patients for the last 15 years. So I'm really sensitive to this subject, and I have great empathy for you. We change that message. I am going to heal and care for myself right now, today, in this moment. Then meditate that. See your body healing. See and feel how it feels when you are in your place of wellness. Live it and wear it right now, today, as though it exists. Then when you come from your meditation into moving forward, having, you know, getting up, ready to go to work, thank you. Thank you for this opportunity that I can go now into a place of business that I have built, and I can take care of the other parts of my life. And that is, at this point, as she said, the skyrocketing costs. And that overwhelming feeling, you've got to just continually practice those sacred spaces and time where I am well, I am caring for myself. I am well, I am caring for myself. Not when I get well, when I get the bills paid. Here I go again. I have to go to work, and it's too much. I feel too overwhelming. And there might be just a couple of things that you might be able to do, one or two, that could just shift that time into a space where you can begin to expand that. I am well. I am taking care of myself. And you might be able to do that by hiring somebody that could work for you as an intern, or, you know, anything along those lines. But start to think about that job or that business that you've built as your opportunity to move forward. Give it grace and thanks. It will change not only your mental, but also your spiritual wellness as well.
And, you know, Yvonne, I love how you incorporated gratitude into that, because I'm such a believer as well. We are nearing our time. But first of all, I'd love to have you back anytime. I love the subject matter. I love what you're doing. And I'd just like to ask you one question from the standpoint of, you know, if I'm deeming you the power, what societal changes would you want done or would you make happen that you believe would relieve some of the pressure that women encounter now?
Yeah, I think that's a really important thing that we take a look at, is how can we begin to make this shift and take some of this pressure off of women. And the last texter, certainly, that's very evident right there, this idea that, you know, that or just the thing that we're faced with each day is having to, you know, make the money and be able to pay for the job and our life all in one. So I think some of the things we can do is continue to bring awareness to this difference between pay and opportunity, and support what we can from, you know, going very big here, support what we can from not only from a standpoint of law and change, but we can then bring that down to a way where women themselves connect more deeply with other women. And I always say, you know, make your own network, make your own connections as far as women that you find interesting or that you want to connect with. And I call that organizing a sisterhood of like-minded women, and share with them your challenges. This is another thing for the last person that called in or texted, and that is to share your challenges. And then you'll be amazed at the network that you can devise by bringing awareness to those challenges, and you might just meet somebody that can help you in that situation. And I also say we need to understand that this is not just a matter of complaint or dissatisfaction. It's a call for improving the quality of life for women in our society, and by extension, those that they care for as well. And when we feel better, we do better. And it's important that we have that support. Yeah, and that affects all of us, men and women alike.
Yep. Yep. Could not agree more. Yvonne, thank you so much. And again, I just want to acknowledge you for really looking at things from so many great ways to look at it. You know, as far as we're talking about mental, we're talking about physical, we're looking at everything. So again, just really want to acknowledge you and thank you. And again, for everybody out there, the book is Breaking Up With Busy. You can find it anywhere, or you can also go to Yvonne's website, which is YvonneTally.com. If you're driving, you can't write these things down, you can always go to AnswersForTheFamily.com, and we will have all of Yvonne's information there. So Yvonne, again, thank you.
Alan, thank you. It was my pleasure.
All right. And for everybody out there, please put on your calendar and tune in next Monday when our special guest will be John Mabry to discuss his new book, Can Adverse Childhood Experience Cause Addiction? And please get a chance, visit our archives of past interviews at AnswersForTheFamily.com, or better yet, subscribe to our show through iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review. It will help us reach more people, and we will greatly appreciate it. The next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please like us and continue to spread the word. Be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.